The main agenda for everybody at the moment is saving the world economy from a recession sliding into a depression. Fortunately, Mr. Brown and Mr. Obama seem to think roughly the same way about this, that you've got to pump a lot of money into the system and pay for it all later. So they have broad agreement, but no doubt there'll be differences of detail. And of course, the US always looks after number one. And Britain is a bit worried about Buy America sentiments, which are quite strong still in the new administration.
And in terms of the impact of this visit on the Prime Minister himself, what do you think will be, do you expect him to get some kind of reflected charisma from being the first European leader to visit President Obama?
Well, I've been reading up these last few days about relationships between presidents and prime ministers. You can never tell. Tony Blair was famously friendly with Bill Clinton and managed to be friendly with George Bush too. Harry Truman and Clem Attlee, the Labour prime minister in the 40s, got on very well, but they didn't visit each other much in those days. Margaret Thatcher, Ronald Reagan, very personal. So what we can tell about Mr. Obama, he's keen to focus on the wider world and not fall back on this particular cozy relationship with Europe first and with Britain in particular, the famous special relationship. He's not a sort of sentimental Anglophile. I think everybody agrees with that. On the other hand, we've always been a pretty reliable ally, and they've certainly put the red carpet out for Gordon Brown. He's been invited to address both houses of Congress. That doesn't happen for many people. So it's a big opportunity, as you put it, for Brown to get a bit of reflected glory from Mr. Obama, provided he uses it right.
And do you think he can?
Well, he's got to avoid lecturing the Americans, and he's got to make a lively Gordon Brown speech rather than a dull Gordon Brown speech, and he mustn't tread on any toes. What I think he probably wants to do is play to his strength. He really does understand the economic issues. He doesn't get them all right, mind you. He didn't as Chancellor, and he doesn't now. Lord knows it's hard enough to make the right choices with the banking system collapsing. But, he talks the talk. And he's a technocrat and a details man, and we know that Obama's that way inclined too. And they both believe, as do the Democrats who now control both houses of Congress, they both believe in an active government. They're not small state people like Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan and George Bush, of course. So there ought to be, there ought to be a big love-in between all these people. They all agree the same thing. But mood music is also important, and GB's not so good at chat and sunshine and mood music in the way that Tony Blair effortlessly found himself able to do. Made himself very popular in America, Blair. Still is popular despite everything.
But perhaps this more international approach that you mentioned from Obama, relying a little bit less on the so-called special relationship, perhaps that's something that will appeal to Mr. Brown.
In theory, it appeals to European leaders. And of course, it's not just about economics here. The world is changing very fast. The economic crisis is making it change faster. And there are sensitive subjects to Europeans. For example, the Security Council, 5 permanent members, each with their veto. They include Britain and France. And many people say the European Union ought to give up one of those 2 seats, have one voice between it, and give that seat to, let's say, India. That's the great emerging economy of Asia, which doesn't have a seat. And the same goes for the voting rights of the International Monetary Fund. Gordon Brown wants that modernized and expanded. And the same goes for the World Bank, set up in 1944 as well. He wants that modernized and expanded. But as soon as you say, hey, you Europeans, hey, you Brits, in order to bring in the Brazilians and the Indians and other emerging economies, we need you to give a little, then it gets tricky for both sides. So plenty of broad agreement, plenty of fighting in the detail.
And just briefly, Michael, do you think there are any risks to Mr. Brown while he's gone? Is there anyone back in London who wants to take advantage of his absence in any way?
Well, you make it sound as if Harriet Harman's about to stage a military coup with tanks on the corner of Parliament Square. I don't think that's quite her style, do you? No, Brown's cabinet, whatever doubts they have about the Prime Minister, are united behind him now. Nobody else could do the job at the moment. Nobody has the expertise, and most of that kind of chat's in the media. David Cameron, of course, has problems of his own with the Americans, partly inherited from Michael Howard, who mucked about on the Iraq War and annoyed the Bush White House. Pretty tricky thing for Howard to do, considering he's such a pro-American, but he managed it. And Cameron, of course, and Osborne are the odd ones out in terms of international reflating the economies, pumping huge quantities of money in. They've stood against that, and even under Mr. Bush, they were a bit isolated, and under Mr. Obama, they're very isolated.